It is 8:40. That means it's time to continue our conversations about the natural world. It is the Tuesday morning show. Thanks to our producer, Mark Jacobs, we've been hosting monthly conversations about natural resource-based issues important to our region. They've included the decline of birds, forest carbon and climate change, pollinators, forest history, and today we are meeting Jerry Niemi. He's a professor emeritus in the Department of Biology at the University of Minnesota Duluth with a new book out that's called The Breeding Birds of Minnesota, History, Ecology, and Conservation. Jerry joins us now, and I hear you need no introduction, Jerry, to John Latimer.
Jerry and I have known each other for a while. Good to see you again. You were actually working on this. You were gathering data the last time we talked, which is a few years ago, and I know how hard it is to write, so I don't blame you for taking a while to get the book out, but I'm curious to hear what you've discovered, and I'm looking forward to reading the book, so take it away. What's new?
Well, I guess, can you hear me now?
Oh, there you are, Jerry. Good morning. Yeah.
I'm not sure what button I didn't press before. So, the foundational piece for the book was what John mentioned was of the Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas, and especially the data gathering stage of that. That was in 2009 to 2013, and we had over 700 volunteers and a crew that I hired to go out and do systematic counts, in which we covered over 98% of the townships in the state of Minnesota. That was the unit of measurement we were using.
Wow.
And we had millions of observations for the state. So ultimately with that, we did produce a website in 2017 with to summarize that information. That website's still up. And it's being used. I was surprised at how many, there are thousands of hits still at this point in time over a course of a month or something of that sort. And anyway, that is the start of it. But we've taken that, we've got a lot of encouragement because websites wane over time, but books last forever. So we decided to write a book. And so we hooked up with U of Minnesota Press and started discussing it with them. And they published a book in 1932. That was really another foundational piece written by T.S. Roberts, who was a physician, but also a professor at the University of Minnesota. He was one of the founders of the Bell Museum down there. And he wrote this massive two-volume book in 1932 that summarized the birds at that point in time. So we had, basically at that point, over 90 years since there's been a summary of the breeding birds of the state of Minnesota. And that's what inspired us to do this, of all the effort that went into it. And we had a wonderful historical legacy that goes back into the 1800s. So we wanted to cover that really well and present it to the people of Minnesota that are very interested in birds.
Yeah, and there are a lot of us and more every day, and that's encouraging. But what about the birds themselves? What did you discover from Robert's book to yours, that 90-year gap? Was there a lot of discouraging information?
Well, there was a lot. I mean, these are maybe the surprises to us, but there are a variety of species that have really increased since this point in time. I was surprised that Robert said that the raven, for example, was going extinct in the 1930s, which is that kind of shocked me. And raven is doing great today. But he also said that about bald eagles. And we know that bald eagles are doing very well, as are osprey and peregrine falcon, sandhill cranes, red-bellied woodpeckers now that Roberts never even saw in the Twin Cities area are all the way to the Canadian border right now. So there are a lot of good things. How about wild turkeys?
Oh, my gosh.
Wild turkeys are everywhere.
They are.
Never would have thought that. Robert said that, at least according to him, he could never find any solid evidence that wild turkeys were ever in the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
Which also surprising is a little bit of contrary to some people. But anyway, there have been a lot of good things. I had one little really tidbit of a really surprise, and just because we're on KAXE and Central Aiken County, and Aiken County is part of that, and that's where Mark is from.
Yeah.
In that effort we did, we found there are two spot really hot spots we found in the state with over 100 breeding species in a 3-mile by 3-mile area of a township. Over 100 breeding species in that small an area. I don't think you could come up very many places in the United States or Canada that would have that many species. A combination of waterfowl, flycatchers, grouse, warblers, etc., swallows, all kinds of species that are in that area. And that is not just the number of individuals. Many of these species have multiple individuals, of course, that are nesting in an area that size. That's pretty amazing. That's in central Aiken County.
Wow. Can you pinpoint it any more than that in case a person wanted
to? I should look that up exactly okay. where it is.
All right.
In the book, we highlight that particular place, but we didn't put the exact location or the city or anything else.
Right, right. I get that.
I can send you the GPS locations if you want them.
I might.
There's an important bird area down in that neck of the woods too.
Have we been there, Mark?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I was astonished. I had not been in that area before, and it just blew my mind. It was so diverse and filled with all sorts of different birds. In fact, Jerry, while we were there, some experienced birders in the group actually saw and identified a loggerhead shrike, which I have never seen. And
that's one of the species is not doing well in the state, though. So that was that. And they used to be here. Roberts talked about them being very common in Carlton County, for example, and a variety of places. But that bird is very, very difficult to find today.
Jerry, you had a couple of high-profile collaborators on this book. Could you give them a little shout-out?
Yeah, I was going to do that. Thank you, Mark, for bringing that up. The lead author is Lee Famuller. And Lee was formerly the director of the Ecological Services Division of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. She then also went to work for the Minnesota Audubon for a number of years. And Lee and I both retired. And we continued with the book. We started when we were still working, but we finished it while being retired. And then there's Janet Green, who's the third author on the paper and in the book. And Jan she's well known in the state, been involved in all kinds of environmental issues, the boards of National Audubon and Minnesota Audubon, as well as Pollution Control Agency and a variety of things. And really, over the years, Jan has been an important mentor, both to Lee and myself. She was a very wise person, done a lot of birding work over the years, and wrote a book in 1974 on Minnesota birds, by the way.
Yeah, I have a copy. Yeah. I consult it often when I need to bring something new to the radio.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, 98 townships, 98% of townships
over 98% of the townships we were able to sample, because I started this project because one thing I wanted to do is, and many atlases do not always cover the entire state that well, but I said, if we're going to do it, we need to do it right and sample all of the places. There's a fellow that works for DNR up in Bemidji that sampled basically all of the Boundary Waters Canoeary Wilderness. He and his wife, Ed Zalanis and Katie Zalanis.
Wow.
They work for the DNR and their waterfowl group now. But he and the two of them sampled most of the Boundary Waters themselves. Mm. They loved it over a couple of years doing that.
So what does it take to sample an area? I'm obviously not qualified, but what would be involved?
Well, what we did is we set up basically the unit of sample was the northeastern township of each northeastern quadrat of each township. was a sampling unit. And we set up a system whereby over the 5-year period, we're going to sample every one of those. And we randomly selected a point within that 3-mile by 3-mile area. And then we did all the sampling from roads. So we sampled the random point. Then we sampled the primary habitat and the most abundant secondary habitat of that township with 10-minute point counts. That's our stand. That's a standard technique that we're using now for sampling. We do it for our monitoring program, the Chippewa and Spear National Forest as well. And anyway, we sampled all those townships and a few that we missed. If you know the Red Lake Peatland very well, there's some big townships in there that are way off of roads that are very difficult to get to.
Right.
And, so we couldn't get to every one of those, and there are just a few scattered ones here and there. Several of them that may be mostly all water, so we maybe skipped them. But we had really good coverage and equal coverage. And now we want to do, if there's a second atlas, we want to go back to those exact places so we can repeat it. We can have very good measurements.
So all of this
birds have changed.
So all of these sites that you stopped at in this 3-mile by 3-mile square are marked to the with a GPS mark, so you can go back and stand in the same spot, or roughly, I mean, within a couple of meters, and then listen again.
That's correct. That's the whole point. They were all predetermined GPS locations. So once they had that on their GPS, they went to that spot, and they couldn't move it. Unless we had some places where the construction going on or things of that sort, we had to move them. We had a random process for doing that.
And this included downtown Minneapolis and?
Yes.
And downtown Red Lake Falls.
9,100 points.
Wow. Amazing. Now, the people doing this, they must have an unbelievable, I don't know, storehouse of bird songs, because that's how you would do it, isn't it? I mean, there would be some observation, but a lot of it is, I hear that bird, I know that bird.
Well, we do several things. We test each person before they can go sample. They have to pass a test of 86 bird songs.
Ooh.
And we test their hearing. Make sure they can hear.
Out on two counts.
Yeah, I can't do it anymore either. No. I've got a hearing aid on now, and I can hear well enough to officially sample.
Yeah.
Then we have a training session for several days to make sure everybody knows what the protocol is, that there's agreement in estimating distances. We estimate distances from the point as well, which is very important for some of the density calculations we do. And so make sure everybody's doing it the same way. We also double enter all the data so we can quickly pick up any mistakes that would be done from entering the data to our computer systems.
Wonderful. This is what happens when scientists lead the experiments.
Yes.
So Jerry.
Did we lose any species during that time frame?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Mark.
Did we lose any species during that time frame between the two publications?
No, I think the passenger pigeon became extinct just right about that time of T.S. Roberts. But that was the only species that has gone extinct in the state of Minnesota. And be quite frank, I'm glad over my 50-year or so career, we've not lost any more at this point. But there's some on the edge, of course.
Were there species in great decline?
Well, you know, I like to talk, look, since we're in the forested area, I like to say the Connecticut warbler is the number one on my list for species in huge decline.
Yeah.
Again, we had a monitoring program with the Chippewa and the Spear National Forest. And we always had quite a few, not a lot, let's say 40 or 50, something of that sort. In recent years, there's been zero or one or two Connecticut warblers. And Connecticut was nothing to do with Connecticut, by the way. You know, somebody named that species way back in the 1800s, probably when a Connecticut warbler flew through the state. it is in Black Spruce Tamarack Bogs. That's where you find the species. And that is declining faster than any other species I know right now in Minnesota.
I actually was out with one of your observers and walked in the black spruce and tamarack bogs and played the songs and listened intently to hear a response. And unfortunately, we didn't hear any response, but this was probably 10 or 15 years ago. So it was.
But also the prairie species, that's another group that really declined. Chestnut collared longspur, a really beautiful bird of the prairies, basically is down to the Felton Prairie, one little area where we seem to find them. It might be scattered here and there, but there's very few around in western, and the western portion of the state has a number of species that are problematic right now.
Are these species in decline throughout their range, or is it just Minnesota's habitats are changing and these birds are not feeling comfortable here?
Well, that's a loaded question in a way, but
sorry,
I don't know the actual answer for all of them, but many of them are on decline.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably the one group of species nationwide that's declining are the ones in agricultural regions of the state of the United States. So there are a number of those species that are in decline. So a group of them, there are a few that might be doing okay in the Great Basin to the west. But
well, Jerry, where can we get this book, and what is its official title? And further, I'd like to ask the website for your breeding bird survey.
The book has all kinds of detail on the lots of detail on the methodology for what we used.
Good,
more so than the website has. The book is available. It should be available at most of the local bookstores. It is available on Amazon. I don't want to necessarily advertise for Amazon, but I go to the local bookstores.
Yep.
You can get it from New Minnesota Press at this following website, z as in zoo, /breedingbirds, all lowercase, no spaces. And the title of the book is Breeding Birds of Minnesota, History, Ecology, and Conservation. Those are the three big issues we tried to hit with that. And we have an introduction that is not on the website where we try to talk about, you know, where did the name of the bird come from, and some quirky things about the bird and some identification characteristics as well. But it is not a field guide. As many of our reviews have been that it's too big to carry in the field. It weighs a little over 8 pounds.
Yeah,
it's a big book, a nice coffee table book. I even use it all the time. I use it this morning to just check up on a couple of details.
Well, you know, and it sounds like a perfect book for me, because oftentimes I'll be talking about a bird like that, and I want to, if I could give them some etymology about the name, or if I can give them some of, gee whiz, I didn't know that about that. That's a bird I see every day, and I never knew that. So, yeah, I'll be into that book for sure.
That's Jerry Niemi, along with Mark Jacobs, the book, The Breeding Birds of Minnesota, History, Ecology, and Conservation. We've run out of time. Thanks so much for the conversation today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me.